You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe?
All right. First of all, my thanks to Ben Kaler for coming on, along with Tim Hudak. And both working at the VA, Ben wounded in Ramadi in 2004, a great dude. And then he brought Tim Hudak with him, former intelligence Marine, enlisted type. But talking about great stuff that the VA's got going. And so, you know, actually, Mike was talking about it last week, doing good stuff in the community with veterans. I think we all have a responsibility to do it. And I know the Marine Corps League dudes wear the crazy red coats and the red piss cutters, but honestly, you gotta be a part of it. You gotta represent the community. And, if you're full up round, you gotta help people. It's our job. And so, if you're not doing that, shame on you, man. Get after it. So joining us is the man, the myth, the legend. He's had a busy, busy couple of days, sleep study, among other things. Talk to me, Big Shooter. What's up?
Oh, man, that sleep study was crazy.
So
I don't know how they intend you to get sleep.
So you went to the sleep study and you didn't sleep. So what does that mean?
I don't know. Well, I got to go see the doctor next week about it. So he reviews, like, all the, whatever the data they captured. So we see after that.
So tell us the story about the sleep study. I've never been part of one.
So, showed up at 8 o'clock. It's like a hotel room. They put you in a hotel room basically in the hospital. And comfortable bed, it's okay. And then TV. Look you up all these monitors, and then you try and go to sleep. But the problem, like I said, it was just like,
right.
I wasn't really comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, it's just all the little noises. You could hear the fan going in the hospital. It was so annoying, man.
So you're laying in there staring at the ceiling, right?
Yeah, and I know they're watching me, and then I'm looking for the camera. You know, I'm like, I wonder if he's looking at me right now. You know, so, I mean, it's just crazy, man.
You know he's not looking at you. You know he's doing, he's on his cell phone, right? So, like, why are you even worried about it?
Yeah. But, nice guy. I mean, guy that was there. Cool guy.
So the sleep study doesn't go well? Is that a surprise?
No.
That's not a surprise.
I wake up, I'm irritable.
Well, that's normal, though, right?
Yeah, it was normal.
All right, so that's normal.
And then got a cup of coffee, and then I went and got my Botox shots.
All right, so, you know, I mean, pretty exciting stuff, though. You know, you did the Botox thing, and you didn't have that kind of trough before getting the new shots. You got to be fired.
No, this was a good month, a good couple months where I didn't have the issues towards the end, you know.
Now, Mike,
so
I've heard...
It's working pretty good.
I've heard, though, that Botox gets consumed, so maybe because it's winter and you're not, you know, you're not as active and your body's not as active and you're not sweating as much and not working as hard, that the Botox lasts longer. Is there a rhyme or reason?
I don't know. Hmm. No, not really. I can't draw any correlation to anything. So I don't know. It's just crazy.
All right. What was the best part of the sleep study?
I was able to watch Waco.
Waco is Mike's newest program that he's watching. So, wow.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Able to watch Waco. Good for you. The
yeah, it was nice.
All right, let me just, I got to do just a piece of holdover business. Somebody just sent me an email and said, hey, great call today. If you have an issue or a compliment, is there a national number I can call? Yeah, we're just talking about the VA. And as usual, the things that are good at the VA, you tend not to hear about. The things that are bad, you will hear about, no doubt. But the White House, mm-hmm. the president set up when he came into office a White House hotline. Okay, that number is 855-948-2311. So 855-945-2311. I'll include all this when we put the recording of the podcast of the Last Hour program. Ben Kaler, Tim Hudak joined us from the VA, and there's VA employment link in there. There's the hotline number in there. Patient advocacy program. That's if you've had a falling out with the VA. And Gunner would be in this group, you know, and you've written them off, you know, call a patient advocate and get in touch with them and say, hey, look, you know, VA is going to be part of my health care for the rest of my life. I'm not on good terms with them because I've just had bad experiences. Can you help me? And you have, you know, patient advocates there. You also have them, you know, at the vet centers help you work through some of those issues. There's a thing called Storytime, which tells positive veteran stories in communities. That's a national program. And then there's an outreach program that gets chaplains involved, and helps them better understand military people, and post-traumatic stress so that, you know, because they come in contact in their congregation with all kinds of people that have served and that have been affected. So all that stuff will be in the post when we put it up here in a little bit. So just a programming note for everybody. All right. All right. So talk to me. What's going on?
Nothing. I mean, today's kind of a relaxing day.
Now, will you fall asleep at some point here? After you didn't sleep all night?
Tired. I mean, I'm tired.
So does the Botox, when they shoot that into your head, do you feel anything? Or you just walk away like, okay?
No, you don't feel anything.
No, you don't feel anything? You don't have, there's not a Botox high?
No, you don't, yeah, you just, I feel good. I mean, I want to take a nap right after this. Because at about 3 o'clock today, I'm going to go to a meet and greet for one of the candidates today.
What do you mean for one of the candidates? There's only one candidate. It's Ron, right?
Well, this guy's running for office for state legislator for, he's running against a friend of mine, Mike Lang, who's the incumbent, who is the conservative, who is a great American. He's done great things. But the guy running against him is the school superintendent.
Yeah.
So he runs on the Republican ticket. At the Republican executive meeting, all the planks that the Texas Republicans hold to him, they ask him is 266 planks. You know, there's 11, you know, all you need to do is pick 11 planks that you'll endorse. Sign your name and then the Republican Party here in Hood County will endorse you. Well, this guy, there's not one plank that he agrees with. I mean, he's a solid Democrat. He's a liberal Democrat. He's a superintendent. He's an administrator in the school for his entire life. He can't tell me you're a Republican and get that far. But he knows that if he runs on the Democratic ticket here in the county, he's going to lose his ass. So he's been playing this, I'm a Republican, but all his fundamental ideals are, liberal, you know, and he's got people, I don't know how people get fooled by this. I mean, come on, guys.
So he's a rhino,
but
Republican in name only.
Yeah. Big time.
Big time. Yeah. Rhino. Whoa. So you're going to go have lunch with him. What are you going to do?
No, I'm not having lunch. I'm just going to go listen to him talk. And then I'm going to ask him some questions.
Oh, really? You're that,
he calls on me.
You're that guy.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
You know, the last one, last good comment we had for him was, would you support a bill as a state legislator that would force school superintendent salary cap at twice of that of teachers at your school? So basically, they couldn't make more than twice the salary of a teacher.
Right.
Shit, man. He looked at us like we were on drugs. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, he makes $206,000 a year here in this county. You know, it's, in the bigger school districts, they make close to $1 million.
That's the stupidest stuff going too.
And yeah, and you know, the problem is 50% of the total state budget is education. You know, the other big percentage is social welfare programs. You know, so the school board has 28 unfunded mandates, and they just keep adding and adding because there's no, they don't care about the cap, man. They think that, you know, all you got to do is keep raising taxes. You know, like we say, your house is owned, 60% of your home is owned by the tax that you pay goes to the schools. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but you know,
and who gets to make the rules? They do.
They do.
Who raises their salary? They do.
Let me just tell you about. I had a friend who was in North Dakota. He's a great community guy, banker, gets elected to the North Dakota Senate, I think, state Senate. And so he's running for re-election, and a teacher opposes him. And so, you know, North Dakota Republican, she's running as a Democrat. There's no wedge issue, and she beats him. And I remember thinking, what? Because he's a president of a bank. He's a savvy guy. Right, in a conservative state, and he loses. And so I started asking, like, I don't understand how he loses. No wedge issue. You know, you and I were talking the other day about running against incumbents with no wedge issues is a loser,
right,
in most parts of the country. And so somebody looked at me and said, Mac, she's a teacher, right? In a precinct or in a state vote like this by district. You know, there might not be a bigger block than the education block. All the teachers in the area, their spouses, if there's kids, when they mobilize that's a lot of votes. And I said,
right.
I said, whoa. So I'd tell you the same thing, man. That's a lot of votes. That's a lot of votes.
Well, what they're doing here in Texas is the Democrats are crossing parties and voting for, their guy that's running under the Republican ticket in the primaries.
Wait a minute. How do Democrats vote in the? Is it an open primary?
Well, So in the primary, you know, it doesn't matter. If you vote for a Republican on the Republican ticket, and you can't in the primary, you can't cross back over in the general election and vote for a Democrat. You have to vote. So that's what they're doing. They just cross over in the primary. They're using the primary to try and put their people in place.
I don't understand.
So they mobilize.
California is, I think, general primary, which is the top two vote getters. You know, you vote for anybody in the primary, and the top two vote getters then, I think, face off. And they could be from the same party. They could be two Democrats. It's never two Republicans, but interesting. Interesting. You know what?
Yeah, but here they cross parties because they know they're not going to get elected out in these rural areas, the Democrats.
Right, right. Well, you know, and nowhere in the country that's rural tends to elect Democrats unless they're conservative Democrats. I mean, that's why you see, like, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Joe, is it Manchin in West Virginia? I mean, they're Democratic senators in very, very conservative states that got elected, and they know if they don't vote conservative – they're going to be voted out of office, and so when you see the president looking for votes, Those are two names that always come up because they have conservative bases, and if they can't win without their conservative base, they can't get reelected without their conservative base. So it is fairly interesting watching. I saw, you know, I watched more of the Trey Gowdy interview. Very interesting, you know, his discussion about, you know, being asked very pointedly, we need people like you in government service, you know, and he said, yeah, he said, you know, politics is hard though. Politics is hard, and he said it's hard on you, and so it made me think of our discussion the other day about what you had to do to be involved in politics in the United States these days. It's pretty interesting little event.
Yeah, the nice guy doesn't win anymore. The moral, ethical guy, he doesn't win.
No, George Bailey and
that
whole...
about him, Mr. And we hold him up, we hold him high, but he's not a very popular dude.
Yeah, and there's certainly the exception that can go there and do the right thing. So I don't know, you know, it's that's why it's interesting that the bill that the Senate approved yesterday, pretty interesting in that they did it. I mean, stuff that we haven't seen done in almost a decade in terms of the Senate came to a budget agreement that would last for 2 years. What? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, and then the House is saying, yeah, well, that's dead here, and whatever. But, you know, again, I think we've forgotten how to do politics in this country. We're so used to it running. There was a number got thrown out that by Lindsey Graham said the DOD has lost $1 trillion in revenue since sequestration has started. $1 trillion. That's criminal. That is absolutely positively criminal, you know. And then, you know, we're watching video of a firm base that's manned by American and Syrian forces getting attacked by armor in eastern Syria. Right? What do you think happened to those? What do you think happened to those guys, Mike, in that armor after they called in the AC-130 and the the F-18s and the F-16s. I'll give you 6 guesses what happened to them.
They no longer walk on the face of the earth.
You know what? There's a lot of things we struggle with. Smoking armor in the desert is not one of them.
No.
Is not one of them. Email, Mac, ask Gunner about the CET at IOC. Okay, Mike, the infantry officer course, evidently late last year, did away with the pass-fail criteria for that combat endurance test that has been a bit controversial. The infantry officer course was asked to validate its requirements, like SOI was asked to validate theirs as the nation, you know, opens up MOSs to men and women. Your thoughts on the CET not being a pass-fail event? It wasn't a pass-fail event when I went.
It was subjective. I mean,
it was scored,
right.
and it was a component. I guess in 2014 or 2015 or 2012, something like that, somebody made it a pass-fail event. If you can't pass this, you can't come. Your thoughts now that it's been modified?
You know, I liked when I was there, I would go down and watch the CET run, the new one, when Todd was the CEO there during this whole thing, you know, when this was all going on. It was great. It was a great program because it did things where it weeded guys out that, had frail minds. They couldn't. You know, the physical aspect of it, it wasn't that challenging. I mean, it was tough. It was a ball buster, but I mean, you're in good shape. You can do it. But what really cracked these guys was the mental side of it. You know, having to think outside the box, do some critical decision making and, make decisions and then, go from there. But, you know, not making it pass fail up. I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I think they did that just to appease some people.
Well, that's the concern, right, that we talked about from the start, is that, hey, look, open it up. Anybody that can meet the standards, just don't change the standard on us. And so I will tell you this, Mike. I mean, for a long time, it wasn't pass-fail, and we produced pretty high-end, you know, infantry officers. So I don't know right. that it being pass because that course is not – if you get through that, you know, that's just one brick in the road. You know, the endurance marches that you do, you know, being up in, you know, and Quantico, up and down those hills every day. Physically, I mean, it's, you're going to get tested. You are not, if you think that that is going to, you know, okay, now we're all in, that ain't the way it is. It's a tough course. And so I don't know. I know that people, and so I got to get somebody from Training and Education Command to talk about the review that IOC did and its own conclusions in terms of validating the things in its POI and were they not able to validate them or how did they get here? So it's going to be interesting. But you know, but Mike will tell you, Marine Corps, they don't, do you think they want to come on and get asked hard questions on Army radio by people that know what they're talking about? No, they want to send the first lieutenant PAO out with the talking points. Like, and the PAO walks out or comes on the air, and the first thing is, I don't want to talk to you. Are you a grunt? No, sir, I'm a PAO. Yeah, so like, what are you going to tell me? What you're reading? Like, that's not the discussion I want to have, so. Anyway, and I'm not hating on PAOs. They have the responsibility, but, this has been a big discussion in the Marine Corps about, would the standards be lower? The process is modified. I don't think that lowers the standard because the standard is a 13-week standard. That should be part of it, no doubt. And again, if you don't run that in the time you're supposed to, or you can't get up the rope and everybody else is, you know, you should be graded appropriately. And if you lack physically in terms of the ability to do that, and Mike said, it's not so much physical, but let me tell you, where you get tested is you're tired and you're hungry and you're wet or you're hotter than hell, and it ain't stopping. And now they just.
Yeah, you gotta make split second decisions.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, instead of two helicopters coming, the helicopters got diverted to a higher priority. You're now going to hump the 6 clicks. You were going to get lifted, and then you're going into the attack. What? Well, what about all the ammunition? Pick it up. Did he just say pick it up, or are my ears playing tricks on me? Oh, no, he said pick it up. Damn it, man, I hate this stuff. But that's what it is. It's yaw mule time. Shut up and color.
Oh yeah,
shut up and
crazy.
So interesting stuff. The do you think that the blueprint? This is based on an email I got. Chuck Hagel got interviewed recently and said that ultimately we're going to have to admit that we're failing, and we failed in Afghanistan, because there isn't a military answer for Afghanistan. Do you think the blueprint that we used in Iraq, Syria, works in Iraq, in Afghanistan? And let me give you the blueprint as I see it. A more mature force on the ground, okay?
Right.
Because, and that's evidently what, you know, worked in Iraq. A more mature force on the ground, they're more mature a little bit in supporting arms. Certainly the Afghans have made strides with their own Air Force.
Yeah.
Our firepower and advisors
and
not taking casualties. Do you think that that plays in Afghanistan like it played in Syria and Iraq?
Okay. And you know what? I was watching, I actually tuned in and watched, what's that? That show on National Geographic about
Chain of Command.
So I watched an episode of Chain of Command, and an old Rod Churger, good buddy of mine, and Matty Reid was on there too.
Matty Reid, yeah,
and a good buddy of mine, and old Roger was running the show, and he was trying to get this brigade, this Afghan brigade. So they sent their guys out there. They linked up with them, their trainers, whatever, and they linked up, and they were gonna. show up and go, and the brigade commander was sitting on the sofa. Like, it was like a typical Iraq, Afghan, Iraq, whatever.
Right.
You know, you got a dozen idiot officers who bought their commission, who know that, you know, for them, they have a golden parachute. They can, they're making money as long as the U.S. government's there on the side. And the thing that troubled me again was after they did this explanation of, okay, we're here. The Marines are going to be here. We're going to support you. We got to get in the offense and we got to go up to these guys. And the brigade commanders, senior officers were like, no, no, we're not ready. We don't have the ammo. We don't have the guns. We don't have the manpower. Everybody's going on leave. You know, that time of year. We don't have the vehicles. We don't have this. And it was the Sergeant Major, Roger Sergeant Major, that said, all right, listen, if that's the problem, I can fix this. If it's resources, I'll get on the phone, talk to General Turner, and we'll get these resources within the day, and then we'll get it done. No, 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 no. You don't understand. You know, the Afghan diplomats don't know. And we don't want to tell them that we're bad, we're not this good, because then they lose their jobs. You know? So it's the problem with all of these models, no matter what you do or strategy that you come with, the problem always lies with, it goes back to the old saying is, I can't care any more than you do.
Right.
So if you don't care, I can't, and I really, really strongly, deeply convicted, you know, morally, ethically, whatever, and I'm all in, and you're like, Anshallah, you know, God's will. Whatever. Then how can I win? It can't. I can only care as much as you do. The problem is, what I'm seeing again, this is the same old story, is they don't care. As long as the U.S. is there swatting the flies, the big fly swatter, you know, then, and taking the heat off their back, and they stay in their position, that's all they care about. You know, to ask them to, and granted, there are probably some great troops on the ground that want to go out and do, they're all in because the patriotic sense is about around them, and they're doing it for the right reasons. The problem is their leadership. It's so corrupt, and, you know, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed from, you know, my first town hall meeting back in 2004 with the Iraqis. Listen to them, and you're like, good God. These guys, oh, there's no way. The only way the Iraqis are going to win is we take all the Iraqis out and we put Americans in here and we give them that kind of belief system or Western belief system, and then we turn them loose. And then the country would have been a model country. The problem is, it's the people. It's the culture.
So did you watch Chain of Command from the start and see? Because it starts in Mosul. Yeah, I'd be curious if you watched it in Mosul, because what you saw in Mosul was not what we experienced. That's not the Iraqi.
I think that was a rarity, Mac. That was a white albino deer. Every once in a while, you run across one. Doesn't make it a, you know.
Okay.
Man, go to Montana. That's all they got is white albino deer.
But that's one. But so, and my point is that Mosul was a huge fight. It was a huge fight, and we didn't suffer any casualties in Mosul, or very few. Very rare. It was mostly special forces guys that got hit with artillery or something like that. Very, very, very few casualties.
Just because you've seen one unicorn.
No, I understand, and that's why I brought the subject up. Do you think, but Mosul was not a small fight. It wasn't like,
I know.
We're going to go into Trek Nala.
It's the unicorn. It's not a herd of unicorns.
I'm with you.
There's no such thing as a herd of unicorns.
I understand what you're saying. That's why, hence my question. Do you think
that
ultimately that we'll prevail in Afghanistan?
No. No, we won't.
All we're doing is kicking.
We have mastered of kicking that can
down the road. Okay, so let me ask you this. Do you think, given we've now moved the aviation sorties and we just attacked a whole bunch of labs and production facilities up by the Chinese border with Afghanistan, which is kind of a new phase in all of this, that we're laying waste to that. Do you think that we can be successful enough to inflict enough pain and death on the Taliban that the moderate Taliban, little T, leaves big T that is in Pakistan and attempts to negotiate for peace there? Do you think that's a possibility?
Mac, have you seen a millipede?
A what?
A millipede.
No, I don't even know what it is.
It looks like a centipede, but it's just got a shit ton more legs. Right?
Yeah.
How do you kill a millipede?
You get a shovel and you smack the shit out of it.
And you smack the shit out of it.
Right.
You don't take a fingernail clipper and cut off 9 legs. Hence the name millipede.
Oh.
Got a million legs.
Right.
And then expect, I've wounded it, and I've taken 6 of its legs off. What? You know, you don't, yeah, you smack the shit out of it. You don't just cut off a little bit here and then call it a victory. No, I don't see, it didn't work. You know how many strategies we went through? Think of how many brilliant think tanks modeled their strategies and sent them to the DOD. And we followed those. We changed those strategies. How many campaigns were you involved in where the strategies changed? I lost count.
Yeah. So this is a very long-winded way of saying you don't think we're going to be successful in Afghanistan.
Quit drinking the Kool-Aid. It's staining your lips.
Ooh.
All it's doing.
Ooh. Yeah, but that's my lips are only superficial. I can wash that off. That stain.
Exactly. My point exactly. It's all that's happening, man. That your buy-in is, look, okay, but I'm drinking the, okay, since I am drinking the Kool-Aid, but at least my lips are turning blue. No, it's superficial, man. I wash off. What? Yeah. No, it's just, it's bothersome. It, and I'm tired, and I see it, and it bugs me. You know, I mean, Mattis was talking about too. I mean, how'd you get all this done when you still got an unfunded deficiency in the military? And 60-something% of your aircraft are still down. And we're juggling, you know, equipment and resources, for battalions and regiments. Because we can only, you know, out of all the regiments and battalions in the Marine Corps, you know, a third of them are fit to go to war. Why? Because of the resources. And it's every little thing that we've ever talked about on the show. It's the helo dunker. We only have one. It's airframes. The V-22, you get 100 sorties for that V-122 to fly for that month. And I'm just using an example. You know, how many sorties are actually allocated to assault lift for training for Marines? 2. The other 98 sorties are actually allocated for, you know, piloted development and sustainment and all this other weird dog and pony shows and Korchumid and all this other stupid shit.
I don't like your pessimism. It's bugging me.
Because it's true, and that's what's bothering you. It bothers me too, Matt. I don't like my pessimism, and I don't look at it being pessimistic.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. Okay, here's what I would tell you. I need Roger Turner will come on the show, and
if you drink great Kool-Aid out of a plastic cup, it tastes the same as drinking great Kool-Aid out of a Waterford Crystal decanter.
Yeah. So, what's your
still
point?
Still the same. Doesn't matter what the vessel is. Doesn't matter where you're drinking it. I drank Grey Kool-Aid out of a waterproof crystal in the White House. I had some in a pocket cup laying on my sofa. Same shit. Doesn't make any difference where you had it, what you're doing with it, the company you were in, or anything else. The bottom line is, it's the same shit. Same shit we've been dealing with this whole time.
I don't know, because I would have said that about Iraq, but they changed. Their military got better when ISIS kicked them out of their own country.
Yeah, but so the Afghans, you think the Afghans are going to be motivated by the same philosophy? They're just going to switch sides. Their path of least resistance. They're water.
You know what, I really want to disagree with Mike, but yeah, well, I can't. Based on my experience. And Mike, here's where I'm at. I think based on what I saw in Iraq, if similar conditions exist in Afghanistan, there's the possibility that you could force the Taliban, and I'm talking about the little T, the crazy T, they're never going to negotiate, okay? The guys who are not commuter fighters, the guys who live there and will fight, get paid money, they would sue for peace. But you've got to lay the wood, and you got to stay, and you got to have an Afghan government that has its shit together, and you have to have a military that's matured enough to do that.
And if
Roger Turner tells me, yeah, that doesn't exist, then I'll agree with
you. He's not going to say that.
Why? He took an oath to tell the truth.
And the other problem is with Afghanistan is your borders. You know, what are we going to do? Well, Iran, Pakistan, our biggest problem, and they're an ally of us. They're our buddies. You know, we beat the living shit out of the Taliban, and where do they go? They go in R&R in Pakistan.
I'm with you. If Roger Turner tells me that no, it isn't the same, it's different, then I say that we have a chance and that it's worth it. But I will say this.
Roger's going to say it's complicated.
Yeah, but I won't let him buy with that. What I want to know, General, are the Afghan forces willing to fight for their country? As we ramp up
all of their forces.
Well,
not just the troops, not the guys fighting. They're mid-level and higher level guys.
Yeah. Are they willing to fight?
I will tell you,
because
you know why? They don't have skin in the game, man. Mm-hmm. They're the chicken.
They're not the pig.
They're the chicken. They're not committed. They're just involved.
Yeah. The pig, so the saying goes, the pig is committed to breakfast, the chicken is involved. Right. And you know what? In their mind, because of because of the way their country is, And their institution isn't developed, and our commitment has wavered. Do you blame them for not being committed? Would you be committed?
No.
All they're doing is trying to preserve their own ass.
Obama's strategy destroyed that country.
Oh my God!
When we were on the verge of winning, we were actually going to win. Taliban was on the ropes, man.
No, they were through they were through the ropes, right? Seriously.
Yeah, no, you're right. They were out of the ropes. They were out of the ring. They were laying on the ground.
Right. There wasn't
in the folding chairs.
Right.
Gasping breath. And then you know what happened? Then, I don't, what military manual do you say, on this date in time, we're going to start our reduction? What? You don't put, you set conditions. You set conditions based on conditions, right?
Right.
These certain conditions have to be met, and then we do it in this next step. Da 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 da. That's the way the military runs. You don't say time. Because the magic thing about time is it doesn't stop. All you gotta do is wait you out now. Time's on my side. If I'm the Taliban. But when that happened, when he announced that we're going to start a phased withdrawal at such and such date to X number of days, it was locked. We couldn't recover that. And you're right. We lost a lot of credibility with those guys. We wavered. Everything we stood for, everything we told those guys, we lied to them. That's not a lie of, you know, hey, I took 35 cents from you. I actually took a dollar. Oh, okay. You got me a lie.
Yeah, that's like people are going to get dead lie.
Yeah. That's a big time lie. That's a lie where people lose their lives over.
Yeah.
Families, generations are wiped out.
Yeah, so when you see a guy hedging, he's hedging for his life, right?
When you got nothing, when you have nothing, you have no material, no car, no job security, no social security, no pension. And the only thing you have left is your life. That's a pretty substantial thing to, you know, to levy against and hedge on a bet. And we turned our back on that one. We just didn't understand. Oh, no, you'll be fine. No, you don't understand. If you leave, they're going to kill us all. No, you'll be fine. Nah. If anything, you'll give your life for your country. Eh. That's the problem I have with that whole thing.
And we did
that for those guys.
In the book I'm reading, I think it's The Sorrow of War or something like that, written by the NBA guy, I never really considered what it was like to be an NBA soldier. So you sign up, right, and you go south. How long is your enlistment? It's for the duration of the war.
So the war is over until you die.
Yeah. And
it's like a German army in World War II.
Yeah, and normally it was until you died. And so what you had was you have NVA units going against the United States Army, the Marine Corps, and just getting a shit blasted out of them, right? And so you went there, and they had this – there was the same camaraderie that all soldiers share. But there's this there's this fatal sense of humor and this black humor they have about when they're going to die and things like that. And to the point where they didn't care anymore. And then when the political guys in the regiment, when they noticed it, then you got pulled out of the line. You went back to a camp and you slept and you ate. And then you went to political discussions all day. How great the harvest is in spite of the letter that you saw that your family says, there's hardly anything to eat. The harvest is terrible. You know, how great the nation is, how great the leader is, how great the war is going. In spite of, and Mike, some of the stories that he tells in this book, you know, what it's like to be on the other side of a napalm attack that you're taking, you know, battery, you know, fire for effect, right? So fire for effect, let's just say, you know, 12-round fire for effect of a battery combined with napalm, and then as you're running away, you know, you get hit with B-52s. It's like I can't even conceive of that. Going into a building that had been hit by artillery and an airstrike to see if there's anybody surviving, and up to your ankles in blood, stepping in that much. I mean, it's hard for even us to imagine. I mean, that reality of trying to fight American firepower and getting caught in it. And yet their units did. And we're just absolutely annihilated. And
well, what they have on their side is patriotism.
Oh, yeah.
They're patriots.
Yeah. There's nowhere else to go. You're going to
deserve. Right. You're in a corner. So all you have left is
each other.
Duty,
yeah.
And each other and your country.
But you don't care about your country anymore. It's just your friends. Here's my country. Right? They're not feeding my family. I believed in the war when I signed up, but the reality is this is Dante's Inferno that I live, and there's no chance of getting out. I'm going to die here.
Right.
And after we get our asses kicked, we get drugged back to this rear area, and we get political, you know, shit shoved down our throat. Like, this is stupid, but this is my life. This is my life.
Well, remember the movie Red Dawn?
Yes.
With Patrick Swayze?
Yes.
You know, I always used to laugh because, you know, Patrick Swayze and the Wolverines, the insurgent group that stood up and fought these Cubans and these Russians, they were kicking their ass. And it was always really good to watch because you're like, yeah, that's the way it is. All right. You know, small group of ragtag insurgent Americans not giving up their freedoms, fighting for one another, fighting for their town, their family, their friends. You know, that's the way it is. You know, fast forward that. If you look back now and you kind of according to the correlation is, we were the Russians and the Cubans.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we weren't. Oh, yeah, we were.
In that, yes.
Yeah. And that's the way you got to look at that kind of stuff. You never take it from the other perspective. You know, why do these guys keep coming? Why are they so stupid? What else do they have?
Yeah. And he talks about
it goes back to you again. How do you kill someone that's willing, is willing and already dead?
Right.
They just don't know it yet.
Right. No, these guys knew it. He talked about one time being in a firefight with the South Vietnamese Army and just calmly walking and shooting and killing a guy. The guy shot at him like four or five times, but he missed him, right? You know, he had the bubble around him that day. He missed him, and he just walks up and boom, you know, with his AK and smokes a dude. Then he sees three other guys, and he does the same thing. And they just, and then everybody said how courageous he was. And he says in the book, I wasn't courageous. I didn't care. I knew I was dying. Okay. And I was not afraid of it anymore. I'd seen enough of it. And I was just doing what I thought I had to do. And it didn't matter to me if I die. But this went on for year after year after year with those guys. Again, they were wiped out. 19, you know, Tet, Kaysan, Hui, both 50 years ago, this month, and, the Tet Offensive. And they were annihilated. And it's really funny when you'll see different articles, you know, about Tet. You never read, In a battle 50 years ago in which the North Vietnamese army was annihilated, the Tet Offensive, you never read that. You read the Tet Offensive, right. The NVA. They were annihilated. And the VC were right. Eliminated. So, it's just really interesting what it was like.
And what we do, instead of killing it, when it was down and everything else, instead of holding its face into the dirt and taking its last gulp of air, we backed off, put sanctions on the North, stopped the bombing, tried to get them to the peace table,
right.
And allowed them to recuperate. Same thing we did in Afghanistan. Same thing we did in Iraq. Same thing we're going to do again. You know why? Because if you look at history, Mac, we are doomed to repeat it. We know the saying, and there's not a military officer I've never run into that doesn't know the history. So how do we keep repeating it? Do you know?
You have to have smart people involved in it.
Because we're not in charge of the war. If Jim Mattis was in charge of the war, if he made every decision, didn't have to ask anybody else, didn't have to go in front of Congress or Senate or anything else, and he said, this is their plan, this is what we're going to do, and you answer to me, this thing would be over by Christmas. I mean, really, it would be over.
I get it.
The problem is, it's a lot more complex than that. We don't get to make those decisions.
No. And you and I have talked about, you know, the Iraq thing. So
I mean, Roger Turner's plan, you don't think that breached the President of the United States?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's what we're doing.
And if he doesn't like it, guess what? Change your plan.
Right. But again, I think the President, I mean, if you look at what's happened, the President has done the President has done himself well by, you know, first of all, staffing the guys around him. you know, did advise him pretty well. And then he's, you know, he's been steady at the helm. He hasn't relented.
Well, one thing I've learned, though, is history, I let history be my after action report. There's too many times in the past I've been burned with, oh, you know what? We got the right guys this time.
Yeah. No, you know, the only thing that makes this different is that we know him, right?
Yeah. We know all these guys.
Yeah, we know him. And so in my head, it's going to be the things that we didn't do, we're going to do now, and we're going to do it the right way. But I would tell you this, Mike. Do you think if Joe Dunford or Jim Mattis didn't think that they could win, do you think that they wouldn't say that?
If what now? If Joe Dunford and Jim Mattis said what?
Did not think that they could prevail in Afghanistan. Do you think they wouldn't sit down and tell the president that?
Yeah, I think they would.
Yeah, so do I.
And I think they have. And they probably said, hey, if you want to really win this, this is what it's going to take.
And you know what? And that's what I believe. And I believe he said okay. And that's why I believe.
I don't believe he said okay. I think there was an agreement somewhere in the middle.
Dunford's, he's.
Is this going to survive Congress, Mac? President doesn't get to say the nod. It's going to survive Congress and Senate.
He did this time. Because, you know, do you remember, I don't know how many months ago, they said, Sekhtar said, we don't believe we need any further authorization from Congress relative to the War Powers Act to go ahead and do what we're doing. And I think it was Mattis in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee when McCain was getting...
Mattis was just in front of us, in front of the committee again today, or just about a week ago.
Yeah, Tuesday. Talking nukes. Big nukes, baby. Yeah. We like our nukes. All right. I know you got to take a nap. Do you have any words of wisdom after this depressing conversation?
Yeah, this goes for Rob.
Rob?
I read his text today.
Montana man?
Yeah. Did you read his text?
About what?
Last one.
About that issue?
That picture. Yeah. No, they really can't be that stupid to walk around holding hands.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
So, my last comment goes to Rob. Rob, pay attention to the show and understand that when you get up in the morning before you go out into the social environment called the world, set your meter to zero. So you'll never ask a question again saying, they really can't be that stupid to walk around. Yes. They're even more stupid than that. They just haven't showed you that side yet. Everybody you run into is stupid. Expect nothing from anybody.
Wow.
From strangers, people that you don't know. You know, again, set your meter to zero. Recalibrate. You go out there and you expect 10, you're going to be an angry son of a bitch by the time you get home. Man, everybody's stupid. Yes. Well, man, that bugs me. Okay. Man, all right. Sounds good. Yeah, and you know, like I kept telling my wife the whole time, when you're in a boat and you're in a river of shit and there's shit all over you floating everywhere, you can call it shit river. I don't care what you call it, but it's everywhere. Don't pick up a single turd and say, man, turd, you pissed me off. I'm going to do something about you. You're surrounded by it. Just accept the fact. You'll get used to it. You know that. Recalibrate yourself. Adjust the bar. And the world becomes a better place.
Philosophy. Michael Musselman here. Those are words of advice, right? Words of friendly advice.
Your life gets easier. Your life gets easier. It really does. It really does. You'll be surprised. If you go out there setting at zero, at the end of the day, you can be like, man, I'm really inspired by humanity today.
As opposed to coming home pissed, like, I can't believe that guy did that.
I can't believe this guy at work is an idiot. Really? I can't believe that person cut me off. Really? I expect it from everybody. And then when it doesn't happen, I'm like, holy crap. There's a glimmer of hope in humanity.
Who's in the background that thinks you're so funny?
Oh, that's my daughter. She knows this. I tell her it all the time. So she comes home the same thing.
Hey, tell your daughter her buddy Max says hey.
I will.
All right.
All right, man.
All right, later.
I'll let you go.
Have a nice nap.
Bye.
There you have it. Philosopher Michael Musselman. You know what? I mean, Mike's being more of a realist than I am. Now, but it's, we need people to tell the truth about this kind of stuff, though. You know what I mean? Whether it's going to war or whatever it is, we need people to tell the truth about it. Because it's pretty important stuff. Pretty important stuff. But I will tell you, I wouldn't have thought what happened in Iraq would have happened in Iraq. When they started Mosul, you know, I think I made the comment here that this is going to go on for years. And it didn't. They fought. And we didn't see that when we were there in Iraq. So, you know, based on that, I have a glimmer of hope that with a different American administration, a different commitment to under a different president, a different Secretary of Defense, that does that all act as a spine stiffener, as well as 10 years, 16 years of combat in their country? Has their military matured to the point where if we add the stiffener, if we add the supporting arms, that they can be the strongest tribe? Because that's the way they look at the world. If we're only marginally stronger, then it doesn't work. But if we're the strongest tribe here and they're going to stay, we can do this. So keep my fingers crossed. All right, my thanks today to Ben Kaler for coming on. And again, Ben, a magnificent bastard from 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. And thank him for coming on, along with a fellow Marine, and his name is Tim Hudak. And Tim is works for the VA in their Veterans Experience Office. He's a communication guy, former intel guy in the Marine Corps. My thanks to them, for both of them, for coming on. And so we'll try to do that. I know Kaler said, oh, we'll come back in a year. No. Good stuff, and stuff people need, whether it's employment advice or how to patch up. You've been at odds with the VA, and so a lot of guys have that same issue. So my thanks to them for coming on today. And as always, a gunner, whether we're laughing or being serious, I love having Mike on. He's a great guy. He's funny, smart. He's been around the world, and not afraid. Anyway, have a great day on a Thursday. All Marine Radio, over and hold it, hold it, hold it.